Hey, good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show on talk808.com. Thank you for listening and tuning in. Go to carolcox.com for this podcast or other shows that we have. As you know, I have the good fortune of talking to Mr. Richard DeConte this morning. We haven't heard from Richard for a while. We had KWAI radio show, and he used to appear there quite often and call in, and so we just decided to get him on air and see what he's doing now. Of course, he's a little under the weather and has been for some while, but he's still quite talkative and cheerful. So, Richard, good morning. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm very well. Thanks so much for remembering me.
How can
and
we
giving
forget?
Me enough.
I
so much enjoyed you and what you do for all of us. And if I could ever contribute a little bit, I'm very glad to do that.
Well, let me disturb you one moment here. I was down at Costco, and I thought about you the other day, and I said, I wonder how Richard is doing. You know why?
Hot dogs or the chicken.
Well, no, neither. They had Sing Tao. They were running a special on Sing Tao.
Oh, yeah, I'm a rascal. You know my affliction is that I you rascal.
For those that are not listening, Sing Tao is a beer. And after the show, Richard and I have sit down occasionally down at the in Chinatown there below the studio and had a Sing Tao at one or two. So how have you been? And you've been watching all of this news going on with the the mayor, the bus fares, just all kinds of issues. The same issues that we last talked were still around, but getting worse or exacerbated. So what's your views on this, all of this stuff?
Well, thank you for asking very quickly. I can't eat or drink. My throat is, my stomach goes, my food goes to my, not to my stomach, but to my lungs. And so I can't eat or drink. And that's, you bringing up Sing Tao hurts me, but most of all. But I have tried to follow the best I can.
Mm-hmm.
And what bothers me probably the most is the Charter Commission and also talking about audits. And I have the complete audit. And I'm going through the 18 recommendations that the original auditor, Edwin Young, proposed. And I try to correlate that with all the newspaper articles because not much I can do now other than that.
Mm-hmm.
And there has to be a forensic audit. An audit means nothing unless there's some kind of empowerment. And I'm not, must be the Attorney General and someone like that, because they come in with the right conclusions, the misdemeanors, and it's so obvious that it's totally out of control.
Uh-huh.
And I've tried to do two things, look at it from neoliberalist economics and also from total quality managed by Deming. And try to correlate those two within, or using the Charter Commission as for factual information.
Uh-huh.
And for example, if you say, well, Dirtfoot, do it right the first time, the question is, what did the Mufi Hanneman in 06 or 08, what did he do the first time, and what is he saying now by blaming Grabowskis? And secondly, it's if you can't measure it, don't do it. They measure nothing except to their own specifications, and that's how we got into trouble. If you talk about who is going to use the ride on the train, they never knew, they don't know now, and they don't know what's going to happen in the future. They haven't decided on what the fare is because they have no idea how to evaluate the fare in the future. If you don't know exactly what you're doing, don't do it. And it was never about, for me, it's never about moving people, mass, public mass transit. It was about TOD, transit-oriented development. Look at what's going on in Kaka'aku. And look at all the contingency on a contingency. And I remember, I have down in my notes going way back to Ivan Kwan, who asked during a hard executive board meeting, he was asked, how are we going to account for what's going on? And he said, well, with the process of this whole project is like taking a drink of water from a fire hydrant. It's out of control. Or somebody like Horner and Kobayashi had a budget meeting, and there in the half circle, she was at the top. And the whole executive board was lined up, and Horner was at the end. And she said, board, there are two or three pillars put up, and you show that you don't have enough money to complete the project. And Horner jumped up and said, what do you want to do? Send the boys back to the bench. Meaning, what was the highest priority for the whole project?
Uh-huh.
Or at Middle Street, you walked in on the second floor and the visitor sat, and then you walked past the bidders and sat down, and there in front of you was two men in white shirts, and on the left side the whole executive board of HART. And the two men in white shirts were engineers. And the engineers said, we have your fiscal plan in front of us, and you have no appropriations for a backup generator.
Uh-huh.
Things like this, from the beginning, it was never done the right way. The priorities were also something other than public mass transit. And the situation now, of course, very impractical, but carried down. I'm so against it. Okay, if it has to stay up, can it be converted to magnet levitation and or buses? Stop it at Mill Street. I have a document here in my hospital room. Can't get it for you now because I'm sat in bed. But it has five instances of where to go. Stop it at Middle Street and just stop it and continue from Middle Street to the Ala Moana with the train. Do the same thing with the bus. Change the route into mimics and forego the original drive. But one of those that are the worst of the five or six is it continuing more or less, in my own words, till you run out of money. It's just incredible that there, the apathy of the public, because they voted for public mass transit, but not necessarily for steel wheel on steel rail. That was Boothie Hanneman. In the quick history, he went to this federal government. He got Obama and the head of the Ways and Means from Hawaii to Larry Lingle, the governor, and she wanted some of, so she got 10% on the 0.05%. And they got the labor unions, and he got the developers, and he got to that kind, but he could never get the city council. He has Duke Bynum. And there was Ann Kobayashi, and Barbara Marshall, God bless all of them. And they required the more or less probably HART, Hawaii Area Rapid Transit Authority, Rapid Transit. And so they gave permission to this private entity to go ahead with the organization and process it. And one, they didn't have to hire civil servants, so they could hire their own. They could hire their own lawyers, raise their own money. They got eminent domain, so they could take your property, and they didn't have to be elected. They were appointed, and And then they were semi-autonomous, just like the water department. And so they have continued all this time, and they continue to do it. And Robbins is repeating Grabowskis and everybody that went before.
Uh-huh.
And again, going back to if you do the audit, you have to have consequences, and there's never been any consequences. So there's no forensic, and it's not empowered. And so I'm here, and I guess you can see my, I am so angry because I can't get up and do my get up. I can sit up, but I haven't been able to go anywhere. But I have clipped out articles, and I'm still trying to follow it. If they had on a flow chart, I have a Hart executive board original flow chart, and it shows from going all the way up from the top, and they changed that because they had Grabowskis get the top, but then they changed it to ordinance whereby the board took over the ultimate authority and Grabowskis no longer was. But down at the very bottom is a box next to last on the right-hand side, and it deals with more or less quality management. If they took that box and they put it up at the top, we wouldn't be in this predicament.
Uh-huh.
And that's primarily what I've been obsessed with and have been over the many years since I've talked to you. And each time I read a paragraph, I could add something to it.
Right.
And in terms of the reason it started was shock and awe, because Mookie Hanneman saw the ability to use mass transit to further his own, and he would, to the unions, if we don't get the work, that we are not going to be able to keep country, and all of that. So,
right.
So
well,
thanks.
You know what, by the way, I saw, is it Barbara Armentrout, what's her name? You've dealt with her before. She was active on the bus issues and concerns. Is it Barbara Armentrout?
Yes, Barbara Armentrout.
Yeah, I saw her the other day. The legislative session started, and, you know, everybody, the meet and greet was going around, and so I saw her there at one of the offices. And,
I want to be kind, but I'm very familiar with Barbara Armentrout. I was one of the things I was going to do before I got hurt. I am live. She was going to apply from the Fair Commission, and Form B was one of those that were going to advocate for her, and he asked Anderson not to require her to do any vetting other than a single-page written application. And what Form B had done for her is help her move from Section 8. And she's been very difficult to understand what her position actually is. Because she's been before the executive board of Hart, praising all of them and knowing that what they were doing was wrong.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, cut you off there for 1 second. I was going to share with you the amount of stories that are out there and claims that how do you prove them and where do you start digging was that Hanneman actually, this is one example, the things that are being bounced around out there now, the gossip machine or the coconut wireless or whatever, that Hanneman with the environmental impact statement promised a job to a key official, city official, if a certain person would go ahead, these are the claims, would go ahead and approve the environmental impact statement. Now, I look at that and go, what? What do you mean? But no other details other than that. So it's like, where do you start? I would love to try and find out. So anybody listening have any information or to offer truth or support the truth of this or the strike it down as being just gossip, I would really like to talk with you and find out. But
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, this goes way, way back in terms of the environmental impact statement. Very quickly, three of them. One was the park. Of course, the most important one was the utilities. And I was at high school, Radford, I believe it was, and there was an engineer there with just a badge saying that he represented, it was a public forum. And there were boards up with, and I looked at the boards, and I was standing in front of them, and I said, there's nothing here about the utilities or wheelchairs on the train or, I said, what about the utilities underground? If you're in a pineapple field, there's no concern, the excavation and the utility. So when you get close to the town, what are you going to do with the wires and tubes and so forth? And he said, we'll deal with that when we get to it. And that's exactly what they did with everything.
Well, they're dealing with it now. You get off the freeway there at Dillingham and Nimitz off the airport.
Yes.
Well, guess what you're introduced to? What greets you? Some construction work, digging in the middle of the street, and sort of a log jam there. And so I assume for the next 4 or 5 years, we'll be experiencing that because they haven't addressed the utilities, overhead utilities, and then the easements and what have you, and not to mention the contaminants. And who knows? But
Hannah Busa was on the charter, the HART board, and she brought this up. That in the physical plan right in front of her at a HART board meeting, you haven't allocated much money for the excavation, but what we're talking about right now. And she was right. So she, from what I heard, I wasn't, went to every board meeting, but she was good. She tried to get them on the right track as far as I know.
Yeah, but also I'm just hoping that we never see her name associated with any more political positions.
I agree.
Because, you know.
I give her that benefit, but I agree with you 100%. More opportunist than almost anything else.
Enough is enough for her. I mean, it's and we're stuck here in the mud with Ige. I mean, nice guy, but policies and the people that
exactly.
He had running his office. I would say what I'm learning with the David Ige office and his administration, even though he talked a good story about the people and getting the people's business done, he delegate. And assign and appoint people that are completely removed, have no sense of public service. It's my way or the highway. It's we do it the way we want to, and the public is just you either accept it or not, or find yourself suing them or challenging them in that sense. But really, David Ige's, he got rid of Scott Enright with the Department of Agriculture. And I mean, that was horrendous what he has done, the trail that he left behind him in the abuse and the abuse of authority and the neglect and the refusal and lack of transparency and all of that for the public. And then, get it cozying up with the business people. You follow?
Yes, I do.
And you take the DLNR now. You're familiar with the DLNR. Ran.
Yes.
They say ran by Suzanne Case. I say ruined by Suzanne Case. I didn't think DLNR could get any worse. But it would be like having a patient that comes in just barely clinging on to life, and the governor decide to assign her to, do the emergency response. This lady is unreal with her policies and the crooked behavior. And there was a recent audit on just in the last 2 weeks, I think. It was in the paper and everything. We knew about it, but the audit wasn't so flattering. And he retained her, saying that she was just doing great things. So, you know, we're not expecting...
Well, I don't know the people, but nothing changes, that's what makes me so angry.
Yeah, and you watch this and you think, this Iggy talks a good story, and he stands there and is like, wow, local boy, he got the spirit, you know, he know what democracy is, he know what open government is, he knows what transparency is. And then in turn, you approach him and you can't complain about his people. You can't communicate to him about his people. He treats it as put anything you deal with him on, in my experience and my observations, he will deal with you at a length. He don't want to get in and mix it up with you. He don't want to respond to letters. He don't want, just let his directors operate off the hook.
Exactly. The apropos to what you're saying is this first deregulation, the variances, height and depth and so forth, they just deregulate so that developers and contractors can benefit, especially in Kakaʻako.
Mm-hmm.
And they let the market set the price,
mm-hmm.
not the city, and the way in which scandalous. And privatization over government, they talk about 3 P's, public-private partnership. Well, we had that with Ultra Consult and the other companies. Kiewit was one of them. And they simply were in it for the money for themselves, and it wasn't for the public, and they continue to do this.
And we didn't. We went and we bought ourselves a train, but no one really had the expertise in building it. So that left it open for fraud, overcosts, overruns,
right.
Change orders. Imagine that.
Here's a good one, Mr. Cox. Horner stood up. Well, not stood up. He was at an executive board meeting, and he made this suggestion. He said, make sure that we don't talk about lawsuits. Change the name semantically to change orders.
Yeah.
But I have a, because I've got binders of material, but I've just recently come across one where they have 5 or 6 lawsuits in one article. Millions of dollars paid because of lawsuits.
I've said long time ago that with in many shows that we've done, if we could do away with change orders and do away with little cost overrun, so to speak, I believe that the taxpayer could be charged at least a quarter of the amount of money. The city wouldn't need to do that, or the state. But for some reason, they operate so fraudulently that it doesn't benefit them, the crooks there in government. They don't get any benefit to having a good, clean, transparent, efficient operation, you know, with monitoring and auditing, timeliness and audits.
You brought it out so many times in so many different ways, so many different subjects and areas, and from goats on top of cliffs to the dairy farms, and all of everything you said has come true. I'm not... because I'm speaking to you directly now, I'm just not praised, but it's absolutely true. And it's the kind of voice that's somewhat unique. There aren't too many others.
Well,
and
follow this now. Before you became ill, and you were familiar with the Red Hill and and the water issues and concerns and what have you. And we've talked to about this to some extent. You can't believe in a small town such as this, with such people proclaiming that they're democratic and they've been in business for 60 years in the control, 50, 60 years at control as a democratic government. Maybe I'm misspeaking on the number of years, but I'll give them 40. They've been in control and taking care of the, quote, people's business. And they're quick to, and I'm no fan of Donald Trump's, but they're quick to talk about Donald Trump in this audience. But the reality is, the crookedest people that I have witnessed in any situation as it relates to public business is the state of Hawaii. That's at the county level, the city level, the state level, even the federal level is corrupt. And how do you get past that? And you look and the cost of living, you know, they want to raise up the weight taxes now of the cars, right?
Oh, boy.
You know, same pothole that you hit every day, is just that they want to charge you more money. But for what purpose? For funneling it to the bus, to the train system, but as well as to pay some of the cost overruns and pay some of the people that are on payroll that are not delivering anything. You follow?
Yes, it's that was one theory, I believe, but the public is apathetic to the point whereby government does what they want, and the only solution to apathy is pain. Until the public feels pain. Now, there's a book called Rhetoric of Agitation and Control, and it goes back to Birmingham, Chicago, and San Francisco and San Francisco State. I was there, and the way in which civil rights came about and women's right to vote was through agitation.
Uh-huh.
And of course, it's easy to say that. It takes a lot of preparation. It takes time, maybe generations. I don't know. But the solution to what you have with this apathy, I don't know how you can change the public.
Uh-huh.
I think and if you say, well, vote, yeah, but vote takes so long. They're right. You vote them out of office, but boy, it's up and down. Dela Cruz and Cachola go up, and Pine and Minow and Manahan come down, and there's no change. What's interesting is the change at the city council. If Ozawa doesn't get elected, if it goes to Waters, it's 5-4 in favor of Caldwell.
Well,
go ahead.
Now, the word. Let's underscore the word apathy. And here's what I have witnessed and come to learn as being a greater problem. And that is, it could be conceived or described as viewed as apathy. But there is an orchestrated, corrupt aspect to the people's way of their managing government. And follow me now. First of all, you don't want to inform the public of much of anything that you're doing.
Yep.
Okay. All you want them to do is be good pigs and cows and chickens and follow the herd, the lead herd. And that means when your taxes.
Yep.
You pay your taxes, be a good citizen. Don't, when it comes to voting, stand out on the highway in the street corners and put on a T-shirt proclaiming who you support and what have you. But the reality is, Richard, the way things have been orchestrated here and laid out now, let's take, for example, the Maipalaoa Bridge there in Waianae, or we'll call it Waianae, along the coast on the west side. This bridge has been determined, it has been determined that this bridge is no longer safe. It has run out its life expectancy. It needs to be replaced. So that's a given, okay? The public goes in, and the quote, the apathetic will go in and convey to their leaders what they want. They agree, and they are informed that they're going to build this bridge, replace this bridge because it's a main artery, thoroughfare, yeah. Connects. So that's people are participating in government. They're not apathetic at that point. So they're really in charged up, and they're going to get a new bridge. Things are going to be safe. It's going to take a little tax dollars, but that's it. But what happens is that then when that meeting is over with, the clowns put on their monkey suits and go back to business as, okay, now, what company are we going to hire? How do we hire this person? Well, who's going to – is this person going to give my nephew a job or my friend's job, or I'm going to – have this person, we're going to grant this contract to this person for $6 million. And in turn, with conditions that he will hire local contractors, right, as a general contractors, and step aside, you'll get a portion of the money. We'll get a portion of the money. Keep the public at bay. Don't inform them. Don't give a progress report. Don't return back and say, we're moving along, and we have, and your legislators that represent you don't inquire, but they only take the good thing to say, see, we got a bridge approved. So the Maipala Ore Bridge there sits there now rusting and cracking and breaking and crumbling. And then you ask for paperwork and you learn, whoa, the contractor defaulted on the contract. So that's about $6-7 million in total. So what did the contractor do? We saw some work. Well, he put a staging ground but didn't bring any equipment in to do any work. Well, if he defaulted, why didn't you quickly come along and rehire someone or rebid? And you have a bond, so the company should have been bonded, right?
Right.
So the public would normally naturally be upset and be concerned, but what might be viewed as being apathetic or apathy would be just you're being kept in the dark on these subjects. And so
no transparency.
No transparency, no formal network, no formal communication, no formal note of progress or status or anything. So when you have all of this laid out now, and then you learn that, well, this contractor has another contract with the city. Now he has one with the state. Then he goes and have a contract with it, and then totaling some 60-some million dollars that we uncovered. And yet, now, in each of those projects, they were driven by the need for the action and the work being done. It was critical. But it was communicated to the people who were participating in the public saying, we want to know, what are you going to do? When are you going to do it? We don't want these problems, the community-minded people. And what the government does, and under the EGA in this situation, granted these contracts and haven't breathed a word to even say, after they were caught with their hands in the cookie jar or ignoring the people's work, getting the work done for the people, not a single notification that, or anything. It's, we caught you, you gave a contract to someone, they didn't fill it out, they didn't complete it, they skipped town, you may have gotten your money back, but we still have a ragged bridge that's sitting there waiting to collapse, possibly threatening the life of many hundreds of thousands of people daily.
Oh, boy.
You know,
whatever happened to Parsons Brinkerhoff? From the beginning, they were very instrumental in the whole project. And
once again, you know, the transparency and there should be notification. I don't know. I wouldn't be able to even guess and get near the right ballpark on that one. What happened to them?
I was there at the Hart Executive Board when they had a conference with Parsons Brinkerhoff.
And
it was live, so you could all hear it. And they were asking them. This is maybe 2 years ago. I forget. I lost track of time. But I did hear it live, and Juan and Grabowskis and so forth, they were praising, telling Parsons Dinkerhoff what they were doing, and they were getting praised by, do it, you're doing it the right way, etc. But there, it goes back to, there were four experts who were picked by Mufti Hanuman to give their expertise on mass public transit and recommendations. And me was when he was mayor. They came on a Friday, and Monday was a holiday, and they met Wednesday. But that next Friday, they came up with steel wheel on steel rail. And these four experts, one of his name was Knight. I forget the names of the others. And Tribadoris was on it, but for whatever reason, there were five. He left. And they came up with steel wheel on steel rail.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why these contracts went through so fast is what Murphy said was because of inflation and the cost is going to be so high, we have to get this done and make the contracts right now. And one of the arguments, and I guess I understand it, is that the cost of building in Hawaii was so high they didn't anticipate that it would cost so much, and that's an excuse. I don't know. I know, I guess the costs went up. Whether that's a good reason for doing what they did, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But there were alternatives to steel wheel and steel rail. They talked about the sound. If you buy a condominium along, well, that's another thing, you see, real estate. Can you imagine how, I remember brochures they had when they talked about buy a condominium in a certain location. And you have hospital and schools and so forth. And right outside your door, you've got mass transportation. This is before maybe even a pillar went up. And of course, look at Kaka'aku now. It's unbelievable. When they said that there would be 10 or 12, I didn't believe that years ago. Look what's happening now. And of course, the median income of the Hawaii, people from Hawaii, so it isn't even close to being comparable to what they're selling at the, and then you have they buy the condominium, the whole building, and they're going to have a playground. It will give you a playground. It will give you four or five units that are affordable.
Well,
no, conspiracy upon conspiracy.
Well, but again, you know, when you see one of those buildings erected, what have we given up, and what are we losing, and what we're incurring is a cost, because they didn't. For example, the mayor was out giving human waste in bags the other day, about a month or so ago, boasting he had a new digester to process the human waste. You know,
yeah.
They took the S out of it. You know, and put it in bags, and so. The theory is it's going to be sold to for fertilizer and what have you. Now, we've gone through this before. We're still all this elaborate scheme that was set up. We're still dumping waste, human fecal matter, into the landfill. We call it, of course, bar screening and what have you. But here's the mayor with his executive director of the environmental services. And mind you, recycling is good. But when you're competing with other municipalities and here in Hawaii, your product is never going to be marketable at the current rate because you can't kill off the bacteria that is involved in that process. You know, you might be able to take the S out of it, but you still got it. And so what happens then is that they spent $35 million on another eggshell And the first one we reported a long time ago about how it was being eroded and eaten away because of the type of the gases and what have you, and the inadequate structuring and the inferior materials that were used. Well, we still got it. We're still grinding, and we're still putting up high-rises, which are inviting more people, taxing a system that was needed to be upgraded anyway, but was never upgraded to the point where it was needed, just without the condos. And the vitrified pipes that lay on the ground are broken and what have you, many of them, the sewer pipes. And they are using a new method, you know, relining the old pipes. But look at the cost. And so when you see this cost come about, it's coming about in the form of a sewer fee. Imagine. I'm paying for a cost that some guy from Timbuktu can come here and buy a $20 million, $30 million condo and a penthouse, and I'm paying for him. That's progress, Richard.
Yeah, well, it just goes on and on, and the people are not their highest priority. They've got other priorities. And they're using our money. That's because Hart was supposed to be able to raise their own money, and they haven't been able to do that. The city wasn't supposed to float bonds for the rail. It was going to come through the fares and the general excise tax.
Oh, yeah. And what happens is that this was going to take stress off of the traffic, right? And I just read a report. Honolulu is the worst traffic in the nation.
Yes.
Probably the world.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and it goes all the way back to the inception of the whole project. They tried to convince people that there would be high ridership, but they don't know. If you have a $30,000 car, are you going to park the car, get on the train, and come downtown, and then get on the train and go? Do you have children? They go into schools. I don't know. Maybe it's going to happen, but for me personally, I questioned it from the beginning. This is shock and awe. This is how Murphy got it through. He used shock and awe. He had everybody convinced that you've got to have mass transit because of the predicament you're in, the two-hour drive or whatever it is from Kapolei. So if you've got the train, you'll get here in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, if you open and close the doors 20 times on the 20 stations, that's going to take up not just travel time.
Well,
I don't know. Go ahead.
I say we look at, you want to know the truth in government and how efficient it is or how effective it can be on behalf of the people and just the overall picture. Many of these guys are so unapproachable. You barely can find them to say good morning to them. That are in office.
Yeah.
This Tommy Waters and Ozawa, it doesn't matter who gets in, there's going to be factions, and they're all still susceptible to big money influence and lobbying. So, you know,
they represent a district that's not going to use the train.
Yeah, well, that's right. But if they want to go to Coalina, why would you not park at the airport and take the train and go to Coalina, even though you wouldn't want to drive all the way, right?
Yeah.
No, I'm just being facetious, but the situation is, I don't believe it matters who gets in out of Waters or Ozawa or Pine or Nor. It's the culture that we are suffering from, the culture of people that were, they say that they're
yippee.
Democratic, they say that
Mr. Cox, uh-huh. Yippee, the culture, you're right,
yeah.
Go.
Yeah, And it's like, if I could just get one of those jobs, and my friends and I and my family are going to be set well, to hell with the rest of the people. And you know, and that's the problem that is plaguing Hawaii. People are flocking to the bus stations and to the airports to leave here, right? And we see a decline in availability of housing and renting. And yet we have this debate about, well, I think we should have the Supreme Court rule on 320 votes or 350 votes. Who cares? We're going to get the same nonsense no matter who's named in it, because water's going to come in and the guy, what's that scoundrel, Kirk Caldwell?
I mean,
if you think Houdini was entertaining. But, you know, did you get the opportunity to see how white this guy's face looked one day when his one of his deputies were announced that he received a target letter from the FBI or from the federal government, from the federal prosecutors?
No, I didn't.
Oh, man. You know, Caldwell's hair is white, right? But this guy was flushed with fear and concern, it seems. I think he's been caught. And I think if they pursue this, what he thought was a mailbox that triggered the problems and the woes that the chief of police have.
I did. Yeah, you're right.
Donald
Leung.
Yes. And that whole corporation council is nothing but the mob-style lawyers that sits around and protect the city officials for being accused of wrongdoing. Help them. They're bullies. They serve as bullies. And will lie to you, will intervene, and knowing that even instead of just ruling, it's a simple release of documents or whatever. Oh, no, I advise my client not to release any documents. Wait, this is public record. These are the kinds of people, Richard. So I saw this image that was flashed across the screen, and Caldwell looked as he was as pale as any ghost I've ever seen, and because it suggested that this man is nervous for something. You know, and I guess it involves the payment of the $250,000 to the chief of police, how they arrived at paying that, and all those kinds of questions, and so which probably going to lead to some other corruption, and we might
goes on and on and on.
Yeah. But
maybe we need the federal government to do something with hardening. I mean, I know there's $1,555,000,000 that hasn't been paid back to the county yet, but the audits don't mean anything unless there's forensic investigation with consequences like this is.
Well,
when the Fed got involved.
You're right. And one thing about the audits, they're spot on. There's and laser-like precision in finding the problem. But you know what? Nobody gets punished.
No. I Mr. Cox, I've been, because I've got the 18 recommendations that are right at the beginning.
Right.
But I've got the whole audit. It's about 70 or 80 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult for me to go through because what Edwin Young did is excellent, and this goes back to, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, and I've gone, of course, in the hospital now, and I can't do it as well as I used to, but I would cut out and paste parts of the audit and then give them to different people, and they just never did it right the first time, nothing, absolutely nothing. But once again, when they talk about an audit, that means nothing, because unless you've got consequences, unless someone is going to be empowered
mm-hmm.
to find them guilty, and not just a penalty like Nestor Garcia was found guilty of 40-plus violations by his own admission and fine. I've had all of that, the original document, and how he coalesced with two chambers of conferences, many different companies, and then his votes on the appropriation of money by the city council, and found guilty of all of them.
And then he now runs a newsroom, and he decides what goes on and off TV and whatever. Isn't that funny about this town? You know, it's the Ethics Commission seems to be aggressive in its efforts now to ferret out wrongdoers. But if you notice there's a certain practice or an expected or anticipated or predictable result, and that is you get caught for stealing 15 years, and in turn, so what we'll do is that we'll allow you to pay back a certain percentage of it, but not a substantial amount. And we might let you retire, and you get your retirement and what have you. And okay, good day. And then they then turn to the media and say, "Well, we found these people guilty." Well, gee, the likelihood of catching 100% of the people stealing from the public is very low. And so when you do catch them, so if all a guy has to do is just pay back. Why don't we see some referral of these cases to the Attorney General's office for prosecution or white-collar crime or theft of public money, refer these matters when the Ethics Commission make their findings and do their investigation? Why aren't they not referring these cases out to the federal government for fraud and charges of these people? Why?
Yeah, the 40 pages on Nestor are individual pages with his signature down at the bottom acknowledging that he actually did this.
Yeah.
Now, what happened to him is he got fined something like $4,000, and two or three weeks he's back on the council.
And then making decision on all these things that we now are finding to be painful to digest. All of these activities.
Think if it's a 5 or 4 vote and he's voting in the fifth. And so what happens is because of him and his negotiation inside the council for the rail.
So Richard, you know, if you're driving to New Jersey or Detroit or somewhere like that, it has a mantra or some kind of a saying, you know, that supports its image, right? You know, like this Pittsburgh is the home of the Steelers, or, you know, positive image, right?
Yeah.
I can't think, but I come up with a little mantra, a little saying for Honolulu. Honolulu, a town where crime pays.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You're absolutely right. The one of the key elements is investigation.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk about the foster homes being investigated, if you talk about dialysis center being investigated, they lack the investigation because they lack money in there. And I, in the situation I'm in right now, I've been trying to follow it closely as I can. But the investigators, one, there aren't enough. And now, number two, they're not well funded. And now if you get a federal contract or grant to help, they don't get the grant because they haven't provided the proper documents to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
Well,
no, and see, you're I don't know others, but to me, you're unique in terms of your investigation. And it's all very logical and reasonable. It's not based on pure emotion or greed. And again, I'm not saying that because now that I'm, but I've followed you for so long that you've convinced me that you're the most authentic, reliable source we have because, of course, the newspapers are, difficult to follow in terms of their schizoid up, down. It's hard to follow. That's unlimited to almost a newspaper.
If you, the newspaper now currently, as we sit here and talk, it's been stripped of, and there are some good reporters.
Yep.
But it's been stripped of most of its monies and resources. I'm informed that the number of the editors was kind of reduced, and then number of them that are have a say in what goes into the paper is business minded, and so it's a newspaper on life support in a sense. They stripped and reduced us, you know, and we should have a firm grip on exposing, and you know what you do in your private life. Your business. I would really give a rat's butt about it. But it's un-American to sit back and witness what we see here and say nothing and do nothing. And it's un-American. Many of these people should give up their citizenship here and move to the country that tolerates corruption and fraud and abuse of public, you know, resources. Squandering them and funneling them out to their friends and their special favorite people. That's un-American. And when you start to see people flocking to get out of this state to go and find a decent living somewhere else, then what's the difference between that and the enemy coming and displacing you by gunpoint or you having to move because your fellow man or your leaders manage it in a manner, in a selfish way, that it caused you the same harm as an enemy had arrived on the shores and evicted you. Which is
yeah, you might appreciate this, but where is Huey Long in the white suit in Louisiana? That's what we've got here.
Oh yeah, oh these guys make Huey Long look like a comedy. The comedy hour, the way they're so intricately woven into. So if declaration of conflict of interest. So you and I want to serve on the milk board, let's say. This is just fictitious, but this is I can give you specifics but to inject a little humor into it. But you and I want to be members of the milk board. So we don't have to declare that we publicly that we are owners of all the ice cream shops, all of the school milk programs, all the WIC programs. We have a hand. All we have to do is make a declaration to somebody in government to some degree, superficially. And we've satisfied the disclosure in public. So when someone comes and says, I'd like to see... I believe I smell some taint here of corruption, of favoritism on the part of Carol Cox and Richard DeConte on the milk board. And, could I get a copy of their declaration, of their disclosure? Sorry, they have filed them, but you can't have them because the state law says you can't have them. So if you got crooks running the shop, and you got crooks who want to get on board and be the board making decisions and policies, right?
Yes. Well, Elefante, when an issue comes up, he will disclose.
Yeah.
He does exactly what Garcia did not do. Garcia didn't disclose, but Elefante does.
Uh-huh.
And I've been in their lives so many times when there are three or four or five disclosures by him, and he had his own city council laughing. It's so obvious that No, if it's really criminal.
Yeah, well, I don't believe we're going to get it solved overnight, but I think if those that are left here in the state, that are, they need to get involved, because they'll tell you, we're going to bring new jobs here, right? And I was laughing the other day, my friend. There was a discussion, you know, what's his name? Anderson. Ikaika Anderson.
Uh-oh.
He was in one of the city council meetings, and he was chastising and scolding a gentleman from California, China, who had gotten exceptions and exemptions or something, but it was building one of those tall condos. And Ikaika told him something to the effect that, go back to China, go back, because you failed to keep your promise of hiring local labor, something to that effect. You follow? And boy, was he nasty and mean mouth and dirty mouth about it. But the reality is, he's witnessed this on other instances where, and he didn't ask those people to leave the country or go back. What had happened is that he promised to use local workforce and then brought in some people from that were non-local, from California or China or somewhere, as construction workers. You follow? But the only reason it was something that hit him and his friends in the pocket, but across the board, you wouldn't get that response. He lends himself to favorable deals to his friends and out there in Hawaii Kai and any other place in his district. And Hawaii Kai is not his district. Kailua and those areas, right?
Yep.
So I just thought that was kind of comical head scratcher. How do you get upset about one matter and yet you behave in the same way on the other hand in other projects? You're allowing other things you tolerate other people doing dirty deeds, but this one here, you want to make a public spectacle of yourself.
They don't care. They're unconscionable. I've been down there with the back slabbers. I've been in front of the city clerk right outside where they come out, the council members, and they've patted me on the back, said hello, shut my hand. And then they go inside and vote, and it goes exactly the opposite of whatever I've tried to profess. And it's, they're just unconscionable.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be closing this hour, and I'm glad and happy you hang around and talk with me on this, and because I've thought about you, and all these things pop up in the paper, and it seems like everything's just going fine. And I wanted to seize this opportunity to show that from another citizen standpoint, things are not fine. Things are just as cockeyed as they were in the beginning.
I so appreciate this call. You make me want. I sometimes get tired and frustrated because I've just got I used to have my own big tape, my desk, and I had everything organized. Now everything went because I couldn't account for it. I've just got this bedside table, portable, and I'm lying on my back right now talking to you, so I can't have everything in front of me. But you're so important to all of us. So, so very important. I feel like going back to work right now, and I will, because I'm getting up. But thank you so very, very much for asking me and calling me and so forth. I appreciate it.
All righty, and the other guys, number of guys have asked about you and how you been, how are you, and where are you. And so I thought, well, let me just call him and ambush him and get him on the phone.
No, thank you. I know, God, and I'm going to have, if I could, I have six thing towels right now, but I can't drink anything.
Well, so, drinking is not good for your health, but Who cares about good health for when it's hot and there's a cold beer in the fridge?
You, I know I don't have to say this, but because you're not, but don't ever, ever consider giving up, because what you give to us is unique, and I can't, the TV that I have, I can't get to you, and I don't have a computer. So this is, thanks so very, very much, Mr. Cox.
Alrighty.
I'll talk to you soon. God bless you.
Alright, aloha, and you
aloha,
take care.
Aloha, mahalo. Bye.
All right. Aloha. Richard DeConte, many of you remember him, and just another citizen, retired school teacher, attended Jesuit school in San Francisco, I think, and was quite active in California at one time, and so been active here. Well, this brings this hour to a close, and I really appreciate it. And we're going to come back in about five and talk about a little bit about border water supply and things like that, and some concerns in the Red Hill. We're not going to stop talking about Red Hill, but we'll talk about that, and we'll be back in.